Good morning. This is going to be my first podcast with what I pretty much call writing is my life. And this morning I am going to be talking to you about something that a number of writers write, which is poetry. And it is also where I started much of my writing. But before I get into that, I am going to talk about some of my favorite poets and perhaps how they have inspired me. The first poet that I want to look at this morning is Emily Dickinson. Her words, I find particularly moving, and it's also the way that she captures certain emotions or even feelings or colors or moods. There's a particular piece of hers that encompasses hope. And I am going to read that for you now. It might be lonelier without the loneliness. I'm so accustomed to my fate. Perhaps the other piece would interrupt the dark and crowd the little room, too scant by cubits to contain. The sacrament of him. I'm not used to hope. It might intrude upon its sweet parade, blasphemy the place, ordained to suffering. It might be easier to fail with land in sight than gain my blue peninsula to perish of delight. Her fixation on loneliness and that not being accustomed to hope, I think that's something we all experience as people, whether it's in our religion or in our day-to-day hopes and goals and dreams, or just in our first time trying new things, whether they are important to us or putting our trust in other people. And I feel like she really captures that in terms of perhaps more of something that she's waiting for. You know, to me, it's almost like she's it kind of makes me think back, you know, when people first sailed over here. But, you know, again, you know, this may not even have any relation to this piece, but the darkness and a little room makes me think something along the lines of a prison cell or a small room on board a ship, because these spaces, at least especially back in the day, weren't very big. They were quite small and could feel like they would crowd or consume you. And they're not places where you would think there would be much hope. So for me, I don't know, just the use of the darkness in contrast to hope and that really very, very consuming and very depressing feeling that we all get of doubt and fear when we question our abilities, you know, whether it's as parents, as friends, as boyfriends, girlfriends, lovers, students, employees, or just people in general, you know, when we try to live our lives to the best and fullest that we can. I really do feel like she kind of captures that that essence of how frail hope can be and how fleeting it can be, especially when we have that goal in sight or that dream in sight. And that is one reason why I find Emily Dickinson so inspiring, other than the fact that she is a female, and given the time in which she was writing, I don't believe female writers were very accepted. As a matter of fact, women weren't even allowed to read, let alone encouraged to do so, because of women learning was not something of which was encouraged. So in a sense, I think of her as a visionary, but then I could possibly say the same of the next two poets that I would like to share at least one piece with you on, because these three particular poets have been sort of an inspiration to me, and the differences between them perhaps also make them a bit more profound, because we have this writer right here, like Emily Dickinson, who seemed to write more in terms of faith and human emotion and things that she observed and felt. And a lot of her language too is often what some might even call vague, because she doesn't just write straight to the point. Rather, she uses places and things as forms of metaphors and similes in order to make them more relatable to each of us. Now, I would like to take a little bit of a darker road here and look into the work of Edgar Allan Poe, who has been a favorite of mine since junior high, high school, and has had a great impact on my writing. And I feel that I connect with him perhaps better than the other two, due to the fact that I've done a tiny bit of research on him, and I find the fact that his life, as so many of ours often are, was more complicated than perhaps most people might have been aware. You know, he very well probably could have struggled with depression. He very well could have struggled, you know, with, you know, his own confidence and feelings. But one thing that I have come to terms with is that, you know, he struggled, like most of us did, with his own personal demon, from what I understand, was alcoholism. And I'm not trying to shirk drinking. You know, we all have our poisons and we pick them well. But and it doesn't necessarily mean drinking, but we all have our vices. We're all human beings and we all struggle, and that's what I think I like about him too, especially the poem I'm about to share with you, because in a way I feel like it connects to the matter of hope, and it is called A Dream Within a Dream. It is one of my two favorite poems that Edgar Allan Poe ever wrote, and I'm going to share with it right now and hopefully explain a little bit of why I enjoy this piece. Take this kiss upon the brow, and in parting from you now, thus much let me avow, you are not wrong, who deem that my days have been a dream. Yet if hope has flown away, in a night or in a day, in a vision or in none, is it therefore the less gone? All that we see or seem is but a dream within a dream. I stand amid the roar of a surf-tormented shore, and I hold within my hand grains of the golden sand. How few, yet how they creep through my fingers to the deep, while I weep, while I weep. O God, can I not grasp them with a tighter clasp? O God, can I not save one from the pitless wave? It's all that we see or seem. But a dream. Then a dream. This poem speaks to me too on various levels, because I feel like it particularly tugs at me as a writer. I have been writing for as long as I can remember. It started for me roughly around the age of 11 to 13, middle school, junior high zone. I picked up the pen, but I'm going to go into that a little later. But the reason this poem particularly hits home for me is I've known writers, and I've been one of those writers who has been discouraged from writing because it's not profitable. It doesn't make a lot of money. I have been told throughout my lifetime to have realistic dreams or goals to work toward. And what is so magical about this piece and the way Edgar Allan Poe talks about not being able to discern between dreams and reality, or just living your life as if you are in a dream, is the fact that for me and for various others, regardless of their age and their experience, writing is their life. It's more than an outlet. It's a drive. It's an ambition. It's a passion. It's something that if we don't do, if we don't take up the pen, if we don't take up a pencil or start typing words down, we don't feel whole. We don't feel complete. If we don't go away to these worlds or pen down our feelings, we're not whole. And while the poem itself might be more about not being able to discern dreams from reality, or walking that fine line, or even just the struggle of trying to obtain your dreams, to me, this poem is very real. It really does touch on something that so many of us writers struggle with. And me just being really what I call an amateur poet, this piece really just really grips the heart and really makes you stop and think for a minute on just how real and valid your existence is. And where you're going. And for me, I'll be honest, my direction is hopefully to finish my first novel and put it to paper so others can enjoy it. And last but not least, I'd like to move on to my third selection of poet, who is no less word-worthy or less admirable than the other two, is one that a number of you probably know. And if any of you follow me on Facebook, you've seen me post at least one of his poems. I am referring to Robert Frost, who is actually my husband's favorite poet, or at least one of them. And the poem I'm going to share with you is one that really a lot of people would probably translate on a religious or spiritual level. But I think, as much as I agree with that sentiment, that It could also just talk about making the right choices in life in general as a human being, because nowadays doing the right thing seems to be all the more difficult, all the more challenging, and it is now becoming a path that fewer and fewer of us take, you know, because once we take that road, we can't really go back. So either we're going to take the path that everybody else walks on that seems easier, or we're going to take that road off to the side that does not look like it's been walked on in a while. It's well worn, it's overgrown, and that most people wouldn't even see, that we don't know where it'll take us. We just know that it's the right thing to do. And this could be with a big decision, you know, in terms of a relationship, of a job, of moving, of just dealing with the situation on hand. Because so many times, it's more or less a question of doing what's right or making the right decision. So I'm going to share with you this beautiful piece by Robert Frost called The Road Not Taken. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood, and I looked down one as far as I could, to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other, as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim, because it was grassy and wanted wear. Though, as for that, the passing there had worn them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden back. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how many leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh. Somewhere ages and ages hence, two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. That last two little lines here, that last line, I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. I think we've all been there. At the end of a road that we don't know how things are going to turn out, we know what we want, we know what we expect, and we know what we hope for. I feel like that when we walk that road, when we take that risk, that chance, and we get to the end of that road, we do feel that. We feel like somehow we've grown or we've learned something. You're not quite the same. You know, whether it's you take a certain stance on an issue that otherwise beforehand you didn't really pay any mind to, or you decide you're going to pursue something, a certain goal or a dream, and you work towards it for possibly years, and you're sitting there struggling and just working the best you can, the hardest you can, and you don't see anything for a good long while until you reach this point, and you look back and you're like, I can't believe that, you know, this many years ago, I started here. I took this road. I made this decision. And here I am now. And if you had told me today that I would be here, I wouldn't believe you. I feel like this poem completely captures that. Or, as I have said, from a religious perspective, from a moral perspective, perhaps more accurately, This could refer to things that we know all too well as we grow up, as we mature and grow as people. Peer pressure, caving in, doing what we see everybody else doing, being part of the norm. This poem in so many ways touches on that, on, you know, doing what comes easily and naturally, or taking that chance and doing what might not necessarily be easy or come easy, that might require a lot more sacrifice and even dedication, and that could even lead to pain. To do what you know and feel to be right. Because those choices, those kind of choices in our lifetime, are the ones that not only shape us, but they could also define our character. Now, before I share two poems I wrote with you, I'd like to talk to you a bit about, I guess, my poetry and a little bit of how I started as a writer. As I said before, I started writing around somewhere on the age of 11 to 13. We're talking junior high, middle school zone. And what's funny is I didn't really realize until now as an adult how much writing really impacted my life, and how, as I matured, my writing did too. Because when I first took up the pen, it was usually in the middle of class. And don't get me wrong, I was a pretty good student. Wouldn't call myself the top 10%, but I did make good grades, and I particularly enjoyed certain subjects, which did get me teased. But what I'm saying more or less here is, while I was in the classroom, I would write down random thoughts, questions that we all ask, you know, like, what is my purpose in life? Why do certain things happen? Why do people focus so much on this? Why is there so much anger and hatred? Why is there this and that? The big question, usually almost always, being why? If not, who am I? Then those questions transformed into more coherent thoughts. Then they matured and became feelings, thoughts, observations, to even life experiences put down on paper. And it wasn't until roughly my sophomore years of high school that I came upon a legitimate publishing company for teenagers that still is in place today. And I'd even encourage a number of young writers out there, if there are any listening, to take advantage of this opportunity, because while you may not see like thousands of dollars in reward or anything like that, you are going to at least have that sense of accomplishment, because these people don't just publish anything that's submitted to them. They take what you write and they look it over. And if they see something in it, you could be one of the many they publish. Though I believe nowadays they actually do offer some kind of prizes now. Because back in the day, this was like 2001, so it's been some time since I've actually had to feel this feeling. And as a matter of fact, these poems were published under my maiden name. because I was not yet married. I wasn't married for at least 2-3 more years afterward. The first one I want to share with you was published in the spring of 2001. And it is called Love from a Rose. A rose, such a beautiful symbol of love. Red as blood, scented with honey, reminding me of the days we had, the laughter we shared. I remember how your smile lit up the room. Now when I go to your special place, I remember when roses bloomed. Even though you are gone, your love is here in all of us. We love you, and we will keep your love alive. We will always remember your gift, love from a rose. This poem is never easy for me to read, let alone share. If you hear me tearing up now, don't be surprised. I wrote this in memory of someone very, very, very dear to me who passed away. And the thing that made me remember her the most was roses, so hence the choice of roses in the poem. I have one more poem that I would like to share. Before I do, though, I want to give you the link to go to for this particular publishing opportunity. As I said before, though, this is not something that everybody just gets into because you submit a poem. Have to take the chance. It is, in essence, a writing contest. And if you're especially in the high school age, this is perfect for you because this not only allows you to get published and win prizes, it also, in an essence, rewards your teachers and schools. And now, actually, they have expanded it beyond high school, which is even more wonderful. As I didn't have this opportunity till high school, and back in the day when I did this, it was only high school age. Now it is as young as elementary, on through middle school, and high school students. Okay? And I will not kid you here, this is not a joke. When I got my poems published, there was more than one copy. My teacher got one, and I got one. And I still have mine to this day. So more or less, this website is www.poeticpower.com. You will know that it's the right site when you see at the top, Creative Communication. It used to be a celebration of young poets. Today, it's now a celebration of today's writers. At the top, you will see, questions of how the contest works, a place for teachers to go, students, for you to go look at the top 10 winners. Now, they only go back so far, so you won't find any as far back as me because the site has changed much since then. A place to give permission, a place to even order a book. So, yes, you could order your book. Now, if you go to order the books, it goes as far back as the year in which I was published. So that is pretty amazing. And I was published both times in 2001, once in the spring and once in the fall. And if you look at a book, they have essay books or poetry books. And it's amazing. I mean, they have a place for you to enter the poetry contest. Your frequently asked questions, there's testimonials. Everything is here. These people are legit. As I said, it is not a hoax, and I could go into that, but I will wait till a later time to cover some of the hardships of rejection and putting yourself out there, because I know them. Maybe not as well as some, but I do know them a bit intimately, and it stings. But this is a chance and an opportunity that I encourage any young writer out there to take. Because if you can get your toe in the water, just take that little chance, eventually you'll have the courage enough to stick your foot in and maybe take the dive. So, the last poem I want to share with you today is one that I'm a bit stunned by, because this particular segment in the fall of 2001, I ended up among the top poems. And to me, that says something, because they only chose, I believe, 10 poems from grades 10 through 12. And I was in 11th grade, just starting 11th grade, when I wrote this piece and submitted it and qualified as one of the top poets that year. And to have that honor, even for that one moment, mind-blowing, humbling, in fact, because I never thought I'd even get that. And I haven't really shared much of my poetry outside of social media since. And even then, I don't share half of what I write. I've got folders hidden. And that's something else I need to tell any of you listening. The importance of putting yourself out there. Yeah, it's scary. It's frightening. But unless you take that chance, you're never going to get anywhere. You literally have to put yourself out there. So, on a closing note, I'm going to read this poem to you, tell you a little bit of why I wrote it, and maybe the experience that inspired it, and leave you with one last thought. The poem is called Beauty of the Sea. Green and vibrant hues cascade swiftly onto the warm sand. Seagulls fly overhead. Shells and other trappings cover the ocean floor. Palm trees swaying, moving in the gentle breeze. Sun is slipping away. The sky turns lightly purple, then gray. Stars light the waters. Moon dimly shines. Cold water rushes over my feet, rising and falling. Would you believe that poem was written about the one time I went and experienced what it was like to be near the ocean? Some of you are going to be like, okay, right, well, big deal. I live near the ocean. For someone who lives in the desert, near the mountains, like just north of Mexico, pretty big shift, you know, and I can't tell you the impact nature has on me, especially the ocean and the mountains. To me, those are some of the most beautiful natural creations that we have around us. Now, today they may not be as beautiful due to pollution, but don't get me started on that. We can probably go on forever. But that poem was written about a particular visit I had to the ocean. I ironically didn't get to stay until nighttime on the beach, but any of us who've seen water, especially at night, you know how it looks? It's got that perfect reflection of the sky, that inky blackness that could be almost haunting, even foreboding. But yet, when you see the way the moon and light reflect off of it, the way it shimmers and shines, there's something truly magical and just breathtaking about the whole experience. And that is something you see both in the day and the night. Night, you see more of an onyx like color and shading about it. Because if any of you have seen a nice, beautiful black stone, I'm talking smooth, polished, just like the kind you'd put in your jewelry, you notice how the surface is shimmering, smooth, but it still has that dark, bleak, eerie color to it. So somehow you've got darkness and light in a perfect little bundle, in a perfect compact space. Then at daytime, during the daylight hours, when the sun hits the water, you've got that prism-like effect. You've got this light almost. It's almost like you took a star and put it out in daylight and let it sit on top of the water, but you can never quite touch it or reach it because the minute you get close to it, it vanishes. It's those kind of things in nature that inspired works like that one for me. And that's why I say take your inspiration from anything. And if you just feel about something so strongly or you get caught up in a moment, put it down. And then don't be afraid to take that step out there, especially if you want to have a future in writing. To put yourself out there and share it. Enter a publishing contest or poetry contest. Enter things, whether it's in your school, your district, online, like this one. But the next time I talk with you, that I share with you, I want to tell you some of the lessons I've learned and things to be cautious of. Because while we do want to put ourselves out there, we want to be careful in a sense of who we put ourselves out there to. But by no means get discouraged, because if writing is your passion, you need to go out there and do it. No one else is going to do it for you. So don't hesitate. Don't wait. Don't rethink it. If you really want to do it, the time is now. And on that note, I leave you. And I'm going to try to come back here in a couple weeks and share with you a little bit of experiences I've had, as I said again, with rejection, with publication, putting yourself out there, and kind of the pros and cons of it. And perhaps some things to take away with you when you decide to cross that threshold, whether it be for a novel, a poem, a short story. Until then, all the best. Keep living your dreams.